Wormwood seems to be losing the fight, huh? Looked like he was going downhill fast last time we saw. So his patient had been dating this strong Christian lady. He had been getting involved here and helping out with air raids since they were in World War II England. He had been brave, and in spite of his fears, he's had courage. He's done what he needed to do, in spite of the fact that he was scared. So that was what brought us up to this lesson. We'll get to see what happens with him. All right, somebody wants to start off reading the first paragraph. Okay, it starts off a little different than most of the other letters. What does he mean, how mistakenly, now that all is lost, you come whimpering to me? In what way could all be lost here? Ah, the patient may have expired now, huh? Okay. All right. So, now then, it's all over here. And they said, all is lost. So what does that mean about the eternal state of his patient? All right. So they let him slip through his fingers. Okay. And so now then, Wormwood is questioning, I guess, his continued relationship with his Uncle Screwtape here. And I guess he's probably kind of wondering, okay, what's going to happen to me now that I was... that I was assigned to this soul, and I ended up letting him be saved. So, what do you gather might be the relationship between Wormwood and Screwtape now? What does Screwtape seem to think is going to happen to Wormwood? Kind of get a few clues here and there in this first paragraph. He does, doesn't he? In one breath, he's saying, oh, yeah, I still care about you, Wormwood. But that last line seems to indicate that Wormwood's future is not good. He says, love you? Why, yes, as dainty a morsel as I ever grew fat on. So some species eat their young. This looks like this may be what's going to happen here. Okay, paragraph number one. He's concerned not only that Wormwood has lost the soul, but he says it echoes through all levels of the kingdom of noise down to the throne itself. Okay? Compare this to what Jesus says about when a soul is saved. Okay, so this would tell us that the opposite is true whenever a soul is lost to the kingdom of darkness, or that they agonize over losing a soul just as much as God would celebrate having gained a soul. Do you think this is true, or is this a figment of C.S. Lewis's imagination? Okay. Where the human is the feast. Okay. I think so too. So I don't know what reaction there is, if any, in Satan's kingdom when somebody's lost, but I would imagine that they're not too pleased about it. Then he talks about a sudden clearing of his eyes. It says, as he saw you for the first time. And once again, this may be a figment of C.S. Lewis's imagination, but even so, imagine this soul here as he exits his life, and suddenly he gets a glimpse of Wormwood. And it says he realizes at that moment that who that was, that this was his tormentor. This was the one that had been tempting him, that had been trying him all this time. So what do you think his reaction might be? Imagine if you slipped from life and you saw your personal demon that had been assigned to you, and you instantly knew and recognized all the times in your life that he had thrown obstacles in your path and had tormented you and everything. We've all been in that situation where you've gotten dirty or muddy or you're soaked with rain. What comes to mind for me is you have a flat tire on the side of the road at night. It's pouring down rain, and you go around to get the spare out, and you slip in the wet ditch and fall down in the mud. And whenever you finally get home that night, and you get the clean shower, and suddenly you're all warm and dry. That's the contrast that he's drawing here between being in this life and slipping into the life to come. Like, all of a sudden, I guess we realize just how bad off we were in this life. No matter how comfortable we feel here compared to heaven, and as you see that person who was making your life miserable, suddenly you realize just how much they had to do with it. You realize all the things that Satan has been constantly doing to you to try to make your life miserable, to try to draw you away from God. And suddenly you're free from that. All of a sudden that ceases to exist. It's like this big weight has been lifted off your shoulder. Or like this disability that you've had is suddenly gone. All of a sudden, things are better. And the sense of relief that you feel at that moment. Whenever all of a sudden all your problems in life are gone. There's no more financial worries. There's no more pain, suffering, disability, disfigurement perhaps. There's no earthly concerns at all for anything. All of a sudden, all that just disappears off your back. So that's the mental picture that he has here. And he not only did that disappear, but he got the sense of satisfaction of seeing his personal demon there, seeing the demon's face whenever all this happened, and the sense of relief of, it's kind of like, okay, bye, see ya, I'm leaving you behind, you can't hurt me anymore, you can't torment me anymore. So that just seemed to throw salt in Wormwood's wound at that point, whenever that happened. Okay. Any thoughts or comments? Yeah, right. Right. Yes, that's true. Yes, and so that's puts now the agony on him after all that time. Okay. Any other thoughts? All right. Somebody read number two. Kind of makes this like when something really bad is happening to you and then all of a sudden there's relief. Kind of like when you're driving along and you're totally lost and you have no idea where you are. And then all of a sudden you come up to the intersection and you recognize a landmark. You say, now I know where I am. Now then all of a sudden all the confusion is gone. Now I know exactly where I am. Or he says, when you've got this pain and then suddenly it's relieved. He compares it to like having a tooth extracted that's giving you pain. You got all this pain, and then all of a sudden it's gone. And it's just gone as suddenly as it came. So he compares it to that. But he says the worst part is, you know, some people, Satan gets to enjoy that last time before you die. You know, you're in pain and suffering, you're in the hospital, you're in a nursing home, you're being operated on. You know, there's all that. He said, we got cheated out of all this. Apparently, just like Steve said at the beginning here, apparently the bomb just came down and just blew him up. It just was instantaneous. You know, no pain, no hurt, just instantaneously from this life to the one beyond. And so that really bothered Screwtape that he didn't actually get to enjoy these last few moments at least. Even if the soul was going to be lost, at least you feel like I've got that last few seconds for the patient to be in agony or to hurt or maybe to say some blasphemous things or something, you know, curse God for putting him in this situation. You didn't get any of that. It's just gone. Just gone in an instant. So he says it's so unfair that something like that could happen. And he says, did you see how naturally that he entered into the new life? It's just like that's where he was supposed to be all along. So, you know, imagine perhaps if you're a child in a foster home and then suddenly you're reunited with a set of loving parents. You know, you've somehow been separated away from your natural parents, you've been raised in a foster home, you know, perhaps from somebody that's also got six other foster children in there, where your needs are being taken care of, but it's not the same as being in a house with your own parents. And then suddenly you're reunited with your parents, and suddenly you're back where you belong. You're back in your own room. You're the center of your parents' attention. This is what it was like. And you suddenly feel like, this is where I belong. This is where I'm supposed to be. He says, that's what it's like when a soul reaches eternity. And they go to heaven. It's just like, hey, this is where I was meant to be. This life, then you look back at the life that maybe you didn't think was so bad when you were there, but all of a sudden you say, wow, compared to this, this is really special. This is really what I wished that life could have been like all along. Your thoughts are coming. We sing the song, this world is not my home. But a lot of times we start thinking of it, that this is our home. That this is where we belong. And even though it may be comfortable and there's enjoyable things about this life, it's nothing compared with the life to come. It'd be kind of like going to a third world country and offering to adopt a child there. And they look around and they say, why do I want to leave? I'm here, I've got my friends, I'm being fed and being clothed, but they don't know what's waiting on them. They don't know how different life could be if they were adopted by a family that was capable of providing them with real care, with medical care, and nutritious food, and warm clothes, and things like that. Sometimes it is hard for us to imagine. What would it be like without actually having worries and concerns and physical problems and money problems and all these things? What would that be like? It's hard for us to even wrap our brain around that because we're so accustomed to having to overcome adversity. Everything that we do, everything can be a struggle. Sometimes just when it seems like everything's going your way, then there's some kind of a curveball. Other thoughts? Sometimes we don't even realize it, how uncomfortable we are until you get to experience what's better. Kind of like if you look back at how you lived 30 years ago, you may have been completely happy, but then you think, I was doing without so many things that I have now, but I didn't even know. I didn't realize that I was suffering at the time. Without having a cell phone and the computer and the internet to shop on and this nice car that does everything for me, and I didn't know I was suffering. Now I realize I wasn't in the good old days like I thought I was. Okay. Thank you. does feel like home. Or that's all we've known. Why wouldn't it feel like home? Mm-hmm. That's right. Right. There's a little kid in raggedy shorts out standing in the mud in the African village. We don't even know it. I'm wondering where the next meal is coming from. And yet is happy in the condition because they don't know any better. They think this is what life is like. Like him, sometimes we don't realize what we're missing. Okay. Number three. Did you have something to say, Ray? Or were you just clearing your throat a minute ago? Okay. All right. Somebody could read number three. Okay, so he said whenever the soul reached heaven, that not only did it seem like home, but the people there, to include our Heavenly Father, all were familiar. And he could sense the part that they had played in his life. Just like when he saw Wormwood, he realized all the times that Wormwood had hurt him and had sabotaged him and had tormented him. He also saw God and recognized all the times in his life when God had come through for him. Probably remembered all those answered prayers that were long since forgotten here on earth. All those times when perhaps he needed strength, when he needed comfort, when he needed joy, and somehow it worked out. When he had a problem and he prayed about it, and it ended up the problem going away or disappearing, that perhaps he even chalked up to coincidence, but he suddenly recognized everything that God had done for him during his lifetime. And how many times do we pray for something, but deep down we think, okay, I'm just going through this exercise. You know, things are still going to turn out however they turn out. And then sometimes our prayer is answered. And we may thank God, but deep down we're thinking, okay, well, that was probably going to happen anyway. You know, that may have been coincidence that I prayed for something and then something happened. And so it's sometimes hard to shake that we have doubts. And he mentioned in the last paragraph how all the doubts were kind of pushed away when he got to heaven. It's easy for us to doubt sometimes whether God exists, whether the things in the Bible are true, whether God really is hearing our prayers. And, you know, even less likely is God answering our prayers. He concerned about me as an individual when he's got 6 billion people to worry about. You know, all these things enter our thoughts. But he said as soon as that soul got to heaven, all those doubts seemed ridiculous at that point. He says, how could I ever have doubted that God actually existed, or that God was helping me through all these times, because now he saw clearly. Now that Satan wasn't obstructing his view, he was able to see all those good things that God had been doing for him during that time. Yeah, you could easily turn this around to the soul that didn't make it to heaven and is seeing exactly the reverse of all of these things. Except in the same way as this soul, now all the doubts are gone. He sees all of the attempts that God made to get through to him and sees all of the times that he pushed it aside and that he said, maybe later when I'm older, or I'm too busy right now. I'll think about that another time. All those things are probably clear to that soul as well. Any other thoughts? Like when we grow up and become adults, sometimes we understand why parents didn't always do the things that we asked of them. Suddenly it becomes clear when we're a parent ourselves. You didn't let me go to this party of this person of questionable morality, or all of these things that seem so unfair whenever you're young. Suddenly it makes sense whenever you're more mature. And this is the ultimate time of that happening. Now all of a sudden everything in your life is perfectly clear. Now then you can see God's plan throughout it all. You can see the common thread that God had in everything that happened to you, good or bad. Because we realize that sometimes God lets bad things happen to us for a reason. Because there's something that we're going to gain for that. There's some way that may help us either then or else at a future time. Going to provide us the strength and the wisdom and the knowledge that we need for something else in our life.
Yeah. good life. You don't feel you're doing much. You go all around about, you know,
This paragraph reminded me of, I saw a little bit of a movie the other day. And this guy is shaving in his bathroom, and the mirror comes falling down, and he sees there's a camera behind it. And suddenly this guy shows up at his door and says, "Oh, I'm here to fix your mirror." And he goes in there and he fixes the mirror and he tries to leave. And the guy's like, "Wait a minute, you know, tell me what's going on. Why is there a camera behind my mirror? And how come you knew about it and showed up here to fix it?" And as he's going through, he discovers that his whole life is being filmed and that he is a hit TV show. And I don't remember, I don't know if I ever knew the name of it, but this was going on, and he discovered there's cameras all over his house, and that when he goes out, now that ever, and all this was being filmed too, him discovering it, and so now when he goes out, everybody, he had this fan club, and everybody was, you know, he was a celebrity. But now he's messed it up because he discovered the cameras. And he's talking to the producer later, because the producer's saying, "Okay, well, you know, now then the show is going to be canceled." And he says, "But, you know," and he starts asking him questions, and he says, "Well, did you think that was a coincidence that you just got offered this job out of the blue? Did you think it was coincidence that you just happened to meet your wife and she showed up? You know, she's just an actress. And, you know, we've organized that for you to get this job because we, you know, we're trying to make your life interesting so that people want to watch it." And suddenly he realizes all this, that everything that he knew has just been a sham, and that somebody else has been choreographing his life for him. And that's what this paragraph reminds me of. Suddenly we realize God has been doing all these good things in our life that we chalked up to our own ingenuity or our own brilliance or our own hard work, that God has been providing all these things for us and making it possible for us to do the things that we do. Okay, any other thoughts? Okay, somebody read paragraph number 4.
Your own
Okay. He said it seemed so unfair to him that a human being, a created being, created out of the dust of the earth, could go and stand before God, or even in this case, lie prostrate before God, but still be in God's presence whenever the demons couldn't stand to be in God's presence. That it was painful to them to even be in the presence of God, but yet a human being could. It just seemed so grossly unfair to them that would be acceptable, and they still can't understand what God is up to. In a previous letter a few weeks ago, he had the discussion about how it wouldn't be possible for God to really love us, because from the demon's point of view, love is just a completely selfish thing, that nothing that is, that everything is give and take. If something's good for me, it must by definition be bad for you, and vice versa. And so if God is going to be self-sacrificing and do things for us, it must be at his expense. So he must have some ulterior motive behind it. He rejected the idea of anyone sacrificing of themselves in order to do something for somebody else. He says that's not possible. That was outside their realm of comprehension. So that love must be an illusion and a cover for something else. And so that's what he's talking about with the failure of their intelligence department and them not knowing what God is up to. It was a reflection back on that earlier conversation. Okay? So what do you think? There's a popular song out called, I'll do a blank on the name of it. I Can Only Imagine, I think, was the name of it. And it was talking about when you meet God, and it was saying, what would be your reaction when you meet God? Are you going to be able to stand? Are you going to fall to your knees? Are you going to fall down flat? Or are you going to dance with joy? Or what's going to be your reaction when you see God? And that was the subject of the song on it. So, try to picture this time whenever you actually stand before God's throne. He talks about being aware of all of the sins that you've committed. Yes. Much of it's probably stuff you're not proud of.
No.
And the people in the world, they picture, okay, well, God's going to go through and tally up all the bad stuff and tally up all the good stuff and see which way the balance tips. And that's not at all what God said Judgment Day is going to be like. On Judgment Day, for us to be saved, we have to be without sin. We have to be perfect. And so that's the humbling realization that we come to when we become Christians, is that we can't get there by ourselves because we can't be perfect. We're going to all be guilty of sin. And so our only hope is God's mercy. Our only hope is the grace of God to overlook that sin and forgive that sin because of Jesus' sacrifice. It's Jesus' blood alone that makes us clean and makes us able to stand justified before God. Not because of anything that we've done or any good things or anything like that. That we're just there because God allows us to be there. in His grace and mercy, He's chosen to forgive us. And so we can be perfect, and we can stand before Him without sin. Because that's the only way we can be in God's presence, is if we're without sin. But He's going to throw wormwood under the bus now and go on.
Well, and I thought about some of the so-called leaders and preachers who've done this. You know, whenever Solomon made the proper footman, put the same one anyway, Solomon was still going to put him to the bed for some of the days. And Solomon had to go dig him out and said, you know, one of his generals said, you're supposed to be our leader. You cannot come to the bed and help us have to do this. And I think he maybe still kept doing that. But I'm sitting around looking at him for a while because he was stuck.
That's true. All right. I hope you enjoyed this series of letters. Hope that it opened some eyes to some weaknesses that we have and some ways that Satan tries to attack us, that in ways that sometimes we may not have been aware of before. So if you are missing any of the letters, let me know. I do have some copies, and Suzanne and I both have soft copies at home, so we can print any of them that you're missing. Before I close, I also want to pass out to you the next lesson. Russ is going to start a series of lessons, and he wanted to pass out to you lesson one. He wanted me to give that to you before he left today. So I'm going to start these around. And then, John, could you close us in prayer?